Now, before we get into full consideration of, you know, salvation by works or salvation by humans electing one God over another, or, you know, that kind of thing, in essence, it's a work just as well. You know, it's something that we're rewarded, or something, a merit given to us because of something that we've done. We've either worked for this with good works, or we've elected this through a chosen election, right? Or opposed to that then would be this theology of divine election, where it's not what man has done, it's what God has chosen to do and who he's chosen to do it to. Before we get into all that, there's some preliminaries I want to cover here. I want to start with the children of men. I want to know who they are, what they're doing, what they're known by, at least as far as how God is seeing this, as far as God is classifying them. So we look at this section between verses 2 and verses 3. We see this all-encompassing umbrella here. All men under the same banner, children of men. This will include the fool, it'll include the workers of iniquity, it'll include my people, it'll include the workers of iniquity, the righteous, the poor, his people. This is all people. He's looking down, surveying the entire situation. Okay? Everyone under the banner of men. Children of men. And then there's value judgments made on that umbrella, the entirety of man, the children of men as a whole. Okay? Those value judgments include that are all, notice that word all, that means as one, that means all of us, the whole of humanity, the whole of children of men, are gone aside, which means they've turned off. If they were going down the road intending to go to San Bernardino, the children of men have turned off and now somehow gotten on a road that's leading to San Jose. Odd way of explaining it. Or actually they're going, you know, back to El Paso. They're on the road. They don't know it yet. They think they're heading to San Bernardino, but they're heading back to El Paso. They've gone aside. They've turned off. That's a value judgment being made by God of all men. Okay? The next thing, showing that they've all together, again, notice the word all together, unitedly, as one, children of men as a whole, have become filthy, which means they've become corrupt. And that's 14:3. All right? They don't certainly see it that way. As far as they think, they're doing God's service. They think they're doing God's will. They think they're doing this and they're doing that. And their religiosity. And they got the church thing going. And they got study time. And they've got all this and this and that and that and this. Only to find out that, you know. I mean, a lot of people, Children of Men is a great big umbrella here. There's certainly people. As we're looking at it as Christians, they certainly have gone aside and they've certainly become filthy, right? We can make that judgment just with common sense and looking at this and realizing what this society's coming to, can't we? Right? But that's not what this is saying. This is God's judgment of man as a whole. This is his classification. This is his assessment of things. Him looking down on it. Next thing here is none that doeth good. Which means they're not making good or they're not accomplishing good. And I find that an important distinction here, accomplishing good. You know, we intend to do good. We intend to solve world hunger and we intend to solve poverty and we intend to solve illiteracy and we intend to do this and do that and do all this and everything. But how far do we ever carry our intentions? How many good works does that actually amount to? that's not somehow corrupted later down the road or corrupted right from the start? How many good works have we intended to do that we started out doing that have just died off because in one shape or another they've become corrupted, right? They've just lost any momentum heading forward. Well, God's looking down on them and saying, well, there's none. None of these good works, none of these good elections, none of this good faith, none of it amounts to any good. It might mean good as far as you and I, just on a relative, on a human scale. Yes, it's doing society good, or yes, it's doing the community good, or yes, it's doing this family good, right? And in one respect, in God's eyes, that's good. But there's degrees, there's different values. It's a spectrum here of what good ultimately means. And as far as God sees it, looking down on it, none of it in the ultimate sense is amounting to good. These are descriptions of mankind's predominant feature, or their predominant output. Yes, they're doing this, they're doing that, they're doing all sorts of different things, but what they're most known by, or what their output, the final output of everything that they're doing all together can be classified as these things, having gone aside, having altogether become filthy, that there's none that doeth good. See what I'm saying? Despite intentions, despite establishing and trying to maintain and sustain and do this and do it on a relative human scale, none of it is, it's not working, folks, by God's assessment. This is how God sees man. This little, we started to categorize some things into some lists. This is the major key to us understanding Psalms 14 now. This will become important when we begin to consider works-based salvation or human election or faith-based salvation or divine election-based salvation. But as you can begin to sense already, there should be reason for concern already, just with the little bit we've talked about. Then within that larger group, there are value judgments attached to each of these subgroups, putting them in an additional perspective here. Okay? He's already made a value judgment about the whole. Now he's breaking it up into pieces. And I can't say that, in a certain sense, all of us are fools. All of us, in a sense, have said that there's no God, or we're acting as if there's no God, or that kind of thing, right? These value judgments apply to all of us. But it seems that this is, as we divide these into subgroups, this is what this particular group is best known for. This is, their predominant output here. So now, when he says in 14:1, the fool has said in his heart that there is no God. We're talking about the fool here. The value judgment on this is what the fool is known by. This is a predominant output. A fool meaning impious or irreverent. All right? And we can all be this, like I said, but some people seem to have mastered this. Now, this could mean that there is no God, okay? Or it could be that image that they hold to bears no resemblance to actual God, right? They've got a false image, or that the image of God, the proper image of God, has no influence or effect on them. So in essence, he said in his heart that there is no God. Notice it's him saying that. By his output. He may not say it verbally. You're not going to hear anyone say this, except for atheists. That doesn't mean an atheist is a fool. necessarily. It means we're all fools in some respects, but some people take it to a new level. Next value judgment is that they have done abominable works. That means loathsome or detestable works. Again, this is the fool or the impious or irreverent. It's hard for us to understand how what we could be saying or what we were doing or the works that we're doing, even if they're works towards our salvation, how God could take offense at them. Isn't it? How God could take offense at works or belief. Hey, at least the guy believes in something. It's better to believe in something about God than nothing, right? But God can take an offense at that. So let's kind of think of what God would be taking offense to. Well, that these works, these abominable works, though they're well-intended, though they do good on a relative human scale, right? These works are double-hearted. Or these works are hardened. Or these are cold works. You know, not cold to the children of men. Cold as God is looking on it. What does this have to do with anything that I've created you to do, you know? It's cold. It's distant. That would be offensive or loathsome or detestable from them. These works of theirs, or ours, I should say. They're self-exalting. It's us putting ourselves above him or putting ourselves on the same level as him or lowering him down to our level just to make us feel better about ourselves. Or maybe these works are backslidden or done at enmity with God. Yes, they're good works, human relative scale, but they're God takes offense at them. You understand? Or these works are done in his name. Plenty of that going on. Works that he'd rather not have associated with his name, you know. Or these works are done thinking that we're doing service to him when it does nothing of the kind. You can see how God, you would be offended with that if someone was doing a work for you and expecting your salvation or your deliverance granted to them, mercifully granted to them, on the basis of works that are double-hearted and hardened and cold and distant and self-exalting and backslidden and enmity with and done in your name, even though it's not, and done thinking that they're doing service, and they're banking their salvation on that. You'd be offended too, wouldn't you? Okay, let's move on. Next thing, value judgment being made is in regards to the workers of iniquity, that there's no knowledge. They have no knowledge. What? They have no knowledge? That means seeing. They're not seeing. It doesn't mean that they're stupid, necessarily. It could mean that they're very scientific and they're very logical and they've mastered the art of rhetoric and they've mastered the art of logic and semantic and mathematics or chemistry or you name it. Doesn't mean that they're not intelligent. It means that they're not seeing. They're not seeing the landscape. They're not seeing the picture for what it is. They're not seeing everything that they intellectually know in the right perspective, right? Then when it comes to workers of iniquity, I need to explain this because workers of iniquity, we take that to mean that they're sinful or that they're evildoers. They intend to do good or intend to do bad all the time. These are workers of iniquity. That's not necessarily in with the Hebrew understanding of this, what this means. It primarily means that they've exerted themselves towards a vain cause or in a vain manner, right? They go about this and they think it's right. That's right in their own eyes. They go about it. It's right in other people's eyes. It's right in the children's of men's eyes. And they go about doing it. And they go about doing it. And they get to the end of it. And they're at the throne of God. When judgment comes, they realize that it was all done for nothing. It was a vanity. It was a puff of smoke. It was all... That's what workers of inequity is. That's probably the better understanding of this. Though it could mean you intend to do wrong and you do wrong and you're just a filthy, nasty person, right? That could be a worker of inequity, but in a sense, we're all workers of inequity because so much of what we do thinking that it's the right thing to do, but it's actually the vain thing to do, or we get to the end of it and we realize that it was all for nothing. Very important distinction. Next thing, 14:5 talks about where they, in great fear, they, I believe, semantically, is pointing us back to the workers of inequity. So maybe it's not all the workers of inequity, but there's a subcategory of workers of inequity that are in great fear because of what God's doing amongst the righteous, if we're reading the context right. It means they're in alarm. It means they're in terror, and that great terror means great terror, you know? And this is what they're basing their reactions and their works and their even works based towards salvation, even election of God based upon, because they're fear. It's not in trust. The opposite of fear is non-fear. The opposite of fear is trust, okay? Where they should have been in trust of God, they're in great fear of God, okay? That's they. Next thing here, 14:6, they have shamed the counsel of the poor. Shamed meaning to pale or disappoint the counsel, which means the plan of the poor or the prudence of the poor. And this is directed, this is a value judgment placed upon ye, and I believe ye is pointing us back to those that are in great fear, which is pointing us back to the workers of inequity. If I'm reading the English of this, I can't read Hebrew, so I can't really understand. It'd be good to hear a Hebrew scholar tell us who this is actually pointing to. But I have pretty good indication in the English that ye is talking about those in great fear, and great fear is pointing back to those workers of inequity, which could mean all of us. We're all fools, and we're all workers of vain exertion. In one sense or another, in one degree or another. And this plan or prudence of them, kind of have to understand who the poor is here. The poor are the depressed of mind or circumstance. Well, that could be all of us. This could be the children of men. You know, David is saying, oh, that the salvation of Israel were come out of Zion. Giving us the sense that Messiah is going to have to do all this. We are all poor. We cannot pay the price of our salvation. We cannot work for our salvation. We cannot just elect who's going to save us. We're not even at the point where we can make valid decisions in that way because we've all gone astray. We've all gone aside. We've all become filthy. You know, everything we're doing and everything we're believing has some form or some level or some degree of corruption to it. Well, then we are the poor, right? And if we just understood that and we could just discern what we're saying out of that, the prudence gained out of that. But instead, we're... We're going the other direction with that. We're shaming that counsel, or we're paling, or we're trying to disappoint that counsel. Ye workers of inequity. Now note, all but three of these subclassifications within the children of men are identified negatively by the product of their works, which should give us more reason for concern about our considerations of works-based salvation or human election-based salvation. Also note the remaining three, my people, the poor, his people. His people include Israel or Jacob, are identified not by their doings, not by a value judgment placed upon them, but by what I see as God's election of them, and also by what the other groups are doing to them because of it, because of that election, which gives us even more concern in our considerations here today. Now, we'll soon use this list of value judgments here in 14 to more thoroughly examine the potential weaknesses of each of these salvation theologies, right? We'll evaluate them separately using this list as a springboard. But for the moment, let's examine these theologies just on the group classifications being presented here. The children of men, they're in between verses 2 and 3. Can we see that there's a possible weakness if we're talking about salvation based on works? Can we see that there's a possible weakness if we're talking about salvation based on our human election or our choosing or faith in a particular religion? Or you can see that the human element here is the part of the problem. Let's look at this as far as the classification of fool, being impious or irreverent. Is there a possible weakness with all of us, in all of us, is concerning any salvation we might be able to work our way towards, or any election or choice we might make in the case of salvation? Classification, workers of iniquity, those that are exerting themselves towards vanity. Can we see any possible weaknesses, especially when it comes to works-based salvation or our own election of which God is going to save us, or even our faith, if our faith is based on our own election or faith based on works-based salvation? Another classification, my people, meaning the congregated, the people God's gathered together. Can we see a possible weakness with works-based salvation or human election or faith-based? I see a big thing there. What about the workers, those in great fear, fearful terror? Can we see a possible weakness as it would apply to any type of works that they could apply towards salvation, or any type of election they can give towards their salvation? The righteous, meaning the lawful or just. Can we see a possible weakness? Well, it depends on what you're calling righteous. It depends on what you're calling lawful or what you're calling just. Many of these workers of iniquities are so driven by their moral outrage and everything that they believe they're the ones that are lawful, or they believe themselves to be the ones that are just, and they'll call themselves righteous. Right? Is there a possible weakness? You betcha. What about ye, those that are eating my people or my congregation? Again, I think that applies to the workers of iniquity, or points us back to the workers of iniquity. Is there a possible weakness? Could that cause a possible weakness in work-based salvation? Or an election that we, of our free will, give to God? The poor, meaning the depressed of mind and circumstance. Do we see a possible weakness? Not really any value-based judgment made on that, but just in general, can we see a possible weakness? His people, can we see a possible weakness? Well, it depends on who's calling him his people. Are we calling ourselves his people, or is he calling us his people? Is there a possible weakness when it comes to works-based salvation in this case? You see? Perhaps we're beginning to see why David is so vocal about his most urgent anticipation. He's saying, oh, that the salvation of Israel were come out of Zion. It appears by all appearances here that this is the only way out of it, that he sees this. Oh, that the salvation of Israel was coming. He's not telling the people of Israel how to save themselves or what they needed in order for Christ to come down and save them. He's saying, oh, that the salvation of Israel were come out of Zion. So with divine election now, consider that. Are there possible weaknesses drawn out by any of these preliminary evidences that we're going through? I mean, just as God's seen it, God elects, who he's going to save. Okay? For whatever reason. The weakest part of any of these theologies is the human element. The further we detach the human element from this, the closer we're going to get to the purer theology about this, are we not?